listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy and Tommy back with Inspire Excellence Idaho podcast. We're going to have Anthony Baker coming in. Anthony Baker is former Navy SEAL. But right now we're talking about how Tommy's son-in-law looks like McLovin.
So on the new podcast, we're going to involve McLovin a little bit more. That's not McLovin.
That is McLovin.
Okay, but
get a better look. Have you seen the show Superbad? I know you can't answer that publicly, but like it's a great show.
So are we talking about the right? Listen, I'm talking about the Dan Patrick show. The guy that's behind the data is McLovin.
Oh no, I'm talking about Superbad. McLovin.
Okay. Well, I did never see Superbad.
You can't see it, but it's so good.
Okay, now pull up the Dan Patrick show.
Oh McLovin. God, I'm and so you sorry.
What I'm talking about. So the Dan Patrick show, McLovin is the data guy behind the guy looking up everything.
Okay.
Okay, that's not a great picture of him either, but.
Listen, my McLovin is way better than your McLovin. Look at your McLovin.
See, there's McLovin right there. That's who I was talking about.
I thought you were talking about Superman McLovin.
That's what I thought, to be honest. I was like, I'm just going to go back to my career.
But we love you, McLovin. You're good.
Oh,
you are good. Wow. What was the name of the
Either
rapper?
Either way, we love you.
What was the name of the rapper I didn't know?
Post Malone.
Post Malone. I sincerely, if he's a Second Amendment guy, he's from Utah.
Moved there.
Oh, he moved
because he wanted to be in the mountains. He wanted to be in a bunker.
Really?
And yeah. Right?
Just away from the LA crowd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of the fake people.
I do. I'd like to meet him. I'm going to reach out to Post Malone.
Post.
What's up?
He's like probably one of the biggest artists like right now.
Really?
Yeah.
I did like the little clip that you played.
Yeah, that's good.
Did you stay the whole time?
Oh, yeah. So my teenagers, this was their deal. All the sporting events were great, but the Post Malone concert, that was the deal. So, yeah, I stayed.
All right. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like it. We do. I just thought of McLovin when you said McLovin. I was like, oh. So the show Superbad, which you cannot watch, there's this guy, McLovin. And he goes to get a fake ID, but he gives one name, McLovin. And so he hands the fake ID over and she goes, what's your name? And he goes, McLovin. What's your last name? Hey, by the way, this is Anthony Baker that's coming in. So I got Anthony Baker. I got former Navy SEAL, Anthony Baker, newly moved to Boise, Idaho. Anthony, come on in.
Anthony.
How you doing?
Good to see you, man.
12 seat.
How are you? Very nice to meet you.
Anthony.
You
as well. This is Tommy Ahlquist. This is Anthony Baker. I was just sharing with, we were talking a little movies and we got some confusion. First,
wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. First, he said that he looked like McLovin. And I go, yeah, the guy from Superbad. And he goes, no, the guy from what?
The Dan Patrick show, sports talk show guy, has a guy behind the camera that does all the data. And I said, he's our McLovin. And he's on the Superbad reference. So anyway, we just cleared that up.
We cleared it up. So a couple of things. Thank you very much for coming here. Total just getting to know you, talking to you. I shared the story. By the way, when you do talk, go ahead and just talk into the mic. And so we're on the Inspire Excellence podcast that Tommy Ahlquist started last year. Why do you guys look at me like that? Oh, we guys just told you. We just got back from lunch.
Honestly, we're just making sure you say the name of the podcast, right?
I know I said it right. I said it's by Inspire Excellence. So they and give you background. Inspire Excellence was started by Tommy Ahlquist and BVA, and it's all about finding and inspiring excellence in Idaho innovation, Idaho influencers, and those that are making an impact here in Idaho. I had a privilege of being on the show last year. And then I got a kind of a wait what moment where Tommy called up and said, hey, I want you to co-host it with me. So this year we're kicking it off. We're doing a once a week podcast
where we're interviewing interesting and influential people that are proud to be American and proud to be Idahoans. I shared with Tommy the story on how I met Anthony. Anthony reached out to me when I was actually on the cruise, wasn't I?
You were on the en route.
Yeah, I was en route. I was en route to the Buddy Cruise, and Anthony just moved here. Who even gave you my name?
Dr. Carfel.
Yeah, Dr. Carfel gave me a name, and he said, hey, I want to get integrated into Idaho and into Boise. And Dr. Carfel said, Troy's the man. That's who you got to talk to. So, Anthony, give us a quick background. I've been sharing your background and your bio. Pretty impressive.
No, thank you. And then, Tommy, thanks for hosting me. That's a great program you run here, and I was looking at some of your great guest speakers in the past who we've interviewed. So, thanks for doing this.
Wow, it's our pleasure having you. Thank you.
So, I'm not sure what you've said so far, but I just finished a great career in the military. The privilege of serving with the best of the best in U.S. Special Operations, in this case with the Navy SEALs. But originally, I'm from the East Coast, from Annapolis, Maryland. After finishing, graduating from the Naval Academy, I kind of came in the late 80s during the Top Gun era, thought I'd be a pilot, and I was really inspired by a couple of Navy SEALs I met before some of the books and movies were out there, more books back then. So I went right into SEAL training after the Naval Academy. When I graduated there from BUDS, basic underwater demolition SEAL training,
mm-hmm.
I went right into SEAL teams and had the privilege of leading at multiple levels.
Come on.
From an 8-man SEAL squad deployed to Africa and Europe as a new guy.
Dude, that's legit.
Doing my first MSC evacuation riverboat operation, getting shot up for the first time in combat.
Wait, what?
So anyway, this is my first riverboat operation. It was we were sent down. It was right before Easter. We were in Europe, and the European command military owned Europe and Africa. They've since established a command specifically for Africa a couple of years ago. But in this case, we were called down to evacuate Americans, and they expanded to broader Western partners, a lot of Europeans. There was a warlord, Charles Taylor, who was a fighting faction, and they'd evacuate these people out of the embassy in Western Africa, Monrovia, Liberia.
Yeah.
So we flew down and we evacuated a bunch of guys and families and brought them out. So that was just a great introduction to the military. But all this training, it paid off. And they would actually get you at the shooting range, and you would get below the safe rate, below the berm there, and you could hear rounds cracking over your head. So you knew what it felt like. You know what it sounded like getting rounds going across
your head. Real rounds, though.
Real rounds. Trained like you fight. But they weren't shooting. You were in a safe area.
Come on.
But then from there, I had a chance to see a lot of Europe training. Our great partners back mm-hmm. in the mid-90s. So fast forward a couple years later, I was in charge of a 130-man SEAL team as the executive officer, running day-to-day operations, and then deployed to the Middle East doing ground combat operations.
Mm-hmm.
Again, train like you fight, it always resonated. Had a chance to develop leaders along the way there. And then most recently, my last tour as a deputy commander, senior executive director for all special ops in Europe. So over 2,500 guys and gals spread across Europe. And this is kind of where the thawing of relationship with Russia and the resurgence of some of their activities, particularly in Eastern Europe. But a great experience, from having experience in training and operations. And I had a little stint doing acquisitions for a couple of years with innovative guys and gals and civilians and managing money and people. But across, the spectrum of leading guys, leadership is definitely universal. It's a universal trait. Some of the military guys may be perceived as a bit strict and robotic and by the book, but the traits of leading and inspiring, developing, and ultimately accomplishing objectives, it's really universal. And that's one of the things that I've really taken a passion for in my career in the military.
Yeah. And I was sharing with Tommy that, so he moved here with three kids?
Yeah, three young kids. We just finished 26 years in the military.
Yeah.
From Germany, we had to pick a spot to land. And we have family here in Southeast Boise and wanted to be near the trails and the outdoor lifestyle.
Oh, good.
My sister's in Oregon. She loves the Northwest. So that's what really brought us here.
How do you, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, how do you view, relate, and translate that type of knowledge? And I was asking him, when I see your resume and I can look up there that I got SEAL Team 2, SEAL Team 8, deployed Europe, Asia, Middle East, commander and operator. When I see that, sometimes you got to know as entrepreneurs, that scares us because we're like, whoa, that guy's got this, but I don't always know how it translates.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for your service. I think, my deep appreciation. I didn't serve in the military, got close right out of high school. almost went to the Air Force Academy and then went and played college basketball, but always love and respect those people that just put country above all else and do it. So thank you. I hope you feel that appreciation too. I one of the questions I'll get to today is, do you feel that love and respect? Because I certainly speak for most Idahoans after spending the last couple of years around the state that we really do appreciate what you do. Secondly, the training you're talking about, you know, when we talk about leadership and training in the business world, it's just a different level, right? So just to be around guys like you, learn what you've learned from you, what worked in situations that are so much more serious and grave. There's just a lot to learn from you. So we appreciate you being here. And then what I love about it is then your exit, we do anything we can with our company to work with former military veterans in the business world, mm-hmm. because there's just a lot to learn. And there's a couple of things we're doing as a company too with that. But thanks for being here. And I can't wait to hear more today about your plans. I am a little intrigued. So you're in Germany, you're thinking about Idaho. We love Idaho. Obviously this is our place, but what did you know about Idaho before? Had you been here before? And has your family adapted well? Are they liking it here?
So we were, I've been across a number of countries, traveling, seeing the world, but also I've lived, I've had to move 18 times in my last 27 years. A lot of times with the family, sometimes within the city, but I've lived in 9 different cities. And so we could have landed anywhere.
Yeah.
My wife was doing some great research on best places to raise an active family. but also we wanted to be near our family.
Yeah.
We're from the East Coast. I could have easily gotten a job in D.C. I kind of stayed in the government. But that commute to the Pentagon would have been miserable. It would have been over an hour from Annapolis. So I didn't want to go back in that, even though I have great memories of my hometown. I mostly just played sports there. I didn't really have a big outdoorsy upbringing.
Bro, let's be honest. D.C. sucks. Like, let's just call it out loud. D.C. sucks. Compared to Idaho? Like, seriously, I've been a lot. You've been in D.C. too.
Yeah, I was just there last week for the NLCS.
That's right. D.C. sucks.
Yeah, it's great to visit. Fun to leave.
Yeah, fun to leave.
But we just traveled a lot in Europe, 2 hours away. We were in Stuttgart, Germany, about an hour and a half north of Zurich. We could drive a couple hours in each direction to hit a new country. We spent a lot of time in the mountains with the family, with the kids, with the dog, other families. And we want to replicate a little bit of that. And we looked at a number of cities around the Northwest. We looked at Boulder, Colorado. We looked at Bend, Oregon.
Sure.
Looked at Bozeman, Montana. And it really intersected kind of quality of living. Awesome. This is a very veteran-friendly. People are very friendly, by the way. I can elaborate on that as we go here.
Good.
But really, and to be closer to family, my wife has family here. More families moving here. I've got a sister a couple hours away. So it was really that. And you can choose where do you want to live, what do you want to do, how much you want to make.
Yeah.
And we chose location and lifestyle. And then I knew the job would sort itself out. I've got decent retirement pay. I had to sit down with Troy on some things to think about as I integrate here. I've done a few interviews. I'm still keeping my options open. I'm trying to find a good fit here. I'm not going to rush into it, but I want to be selective. But I know there's a lot of people who've been very receptive. Yeah. Some people have said, how do I translate that? Resume is a bit intimidating, and I've had help with a professional resume coach through a special ops foundation who guide volunteers to kind of translate. Okay, what does this mean? So some of my terminology, I've tried to even in my LinkedIn profile, which I wasn't very proficient at LinkedIn. But how do you translate? So I was the commanding officer of Navy SEAL.
Are you nervous at all? I mean, you think about it, you're so accomplished. You've spent all this time, and you know that world, right? You've led in that world, and now you're coming back to civilian life. What are some of the emotions you felt? Is it because you got to be ultra confident in what you are and who you are in the military? What's it like?
So I've always been told for guys who've retired ahead of me or transitioned out of the military, they've had some challenging adjustments. Mm-hmm. You can stay in your military hometown in San Diego and get a job at the military SEAL headquarters and just wear a coat and tie and work as a continuity as a civilian. And some guys, they relish in that. We decided to make a pretty big break away from other military.
Yeah.
And I know that if I was in a leadership role in Company X, I couldn't make the widget necessarily. I'm not super technical, but I knew I could lead different groups of people. I think one of the challenges of having led some champion and pushing some leadership development programs of I'm teaching young SEALs, especially the officers. I was an officer for the last 26 years in the SEAL teams. I've walked that walk, so I know what it's like. So I was very comfortable speaking in those settings.
Right.
So I need to be cognizant of the different backgrounds that I'll be hopefully not too distant future, but in charge of people, leading people, inspiring and mentoring them with some of my stories, many of which I think can easily translate. You know, some of my decisions were life and death. Some of them were kind of business decision, my acquisition job. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a bit of anxiety, but the welcomeness of the Idaho community
fantastic.
Is very, very, very welcoming.
But Anthony, it's and Tommy, you and I, we've all talked about this in the session that you and I went through. There's trepidation on both sides.
Yeah.
Because you want to, am I supposed to constantly say, hey, thanks for your service, thanks for your service? Or am I supposed to say, Anthony, get a grip and flip your shit and talk to you? You know, and it's trying to find that humanized middle ground, right? Sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. I'm working on my cussing right now. I told Anthony I'm a practitioner towards greatness, Tommy. But it honestly is it's a balance, because we want to show that respect. But when you and I were talking, I think it is a struggle, because here's what I can't stand, and I've heard you say it, I've heard other people say it, is, well, you're overqualified. Yeah, like, to me, that I'll get that as a regular person in my career. We're like, well, you're just so overqualified, we just can't have you. That's a polite way of saying hit the skids, you know. And I think it's kind of, you know, like, well, shit, I don't like that, or darn it, I don't like that. You know, so I'm sorry, Tommy. Tommy's going to get mad at me. I can't. Anthony, lead us through leadership. I'm not supposed to cuss right now. I'm practicing that. But have you gotten a lot of, you're overqualified? And it's a two-part question. You're overqualified. And then in reverse, how do you want us to talk to you?
So there are some people who said, they're saying, so what do you want to do?
Yeah.
I have a passion for leading. I have a passion for developing leaders. And I'd like to continue in that role. I'm industry agnostic, where I like to be based out of Boise. I got a young family, so I don't want to live on the road.
Yeah.
So I'd like to work from a Boise-based company, whether it's a national or global company or a local company. But some people I have passed on the resume, and I think there's some people kind of not sure where I'd be a good fit. My last job was in the executive suite, working with very senior people every day, taking stuff from D.C., translating strategic guidance down to the operational level of the guys that are in Eastern Europe doing good things. So I've been exposed to kind of a full gamut there.
Yeah.
But I know that I can't expect to come in at the same level necessarily. So I could come down a rank or two, so to speak, and learn from a company. Ideally, I would join a leadership team where I could complement my experience with theirs and make an organization better. So I think there's room for some synchronization there. But some people have been a little bit, you know, you would help if you had a technical background, if you had the certification.
Mm.
And then others, I went to a transition seminar with special ops guys in Bozeman. And I had this guy said, I was talking about leisure development, executive coaching. Should I go to this 1 week course in City X? It's like, you've been doing this for 25 years. Yeah. You were in charge of the entire Navy SEAL training program. We did the selection, training, qualification. We've been managing talent, you know, from the initial pipeline all the way through our test gates to be selected to lead at certain levels and progress with our military rank. So I know that even some of the guys have said, your resume doesn't speak to it, your LinkedIn profile doesn't say that you actually have done this stuff. So it's been good for people to help me translate some of the terminology so that people can relate to what I've done. But I also know that I can learn a lot from the real world. So I think there'll be a good fit there wherever I end up.
Yeah, but I'd retrain the brain. When I hear, because I've told you my buddy Ray Cash Care, which by the way, also a phenomenal American and a patriot, served his country well, his dev crew, Navy SEALs. When I hear him say the same thing, like, I think when I enter the real world, throw that out, man. You guys are in the real world. There's no more real than, like, there's no more real than when bullets are flying over your head. But you probably need to, and I would ask Tommy this directly, like, I know how I view it. As an employer, I know how I go, okay, how would I translate that? And sometimes I translate it like, it's awesome, I just don't know where the fit is. Or it's awesome, I just don't have the budget.
Well, I think the nice thing, you've said a couple of things, right? Your leadership's strong, you know how to train people, you know how to build teams. You know, that's just what you do. Now you just got to find the right fit for you, right? Because as you come out, the transition, how old are you?
49.
So at 49, you want the right fit. You want the right fit for you and your family, and then you want the right fit for a company. But the nice thing is the kind of leadership qualities that you have. I mean, that's going to fit so many different companies, so many different industries. I think you said it earlier, just be selective, make sure you get the right fit. I have a question for you. You know, as we look at the Navy SEALs, I mean, you just say that word and it just invokes, you know, great pride in our country.
Yeah.
The other thing I think of immediately is, is, you know, those are the guys you send in when you really need the job done, mm-hmm. right? Tell us a little bit about your training and the leadership qualities that you looked for as you trained others in that role. What did it take? What could those of us looking from the outside in learn from that experience?
How does it translate?
How does it translate?
Yeah, how does it translate?
So really for me, I mean, as a young guy, you know, I was the beneficiary of some great leaders throughout my career. I had a chance to work for Admiral Bill McRaven a couple of times. He was an inspirational leader. Hmm. We even highlighted his role a couple of years ago.
Bill McRaven?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just asking him that. He's going to pull it up.
But he talked about his job as a senior military leader to kind of pave the way, take out roadblocks to accomplish the mission.
Oh, that guy's legit, yeah. Retired U.S. Navy Admiral.
So he was in charge of Joint Special Operations Command during the Bin Laden mission, which he's pretty known for.
Okay.
But along throughout my career, I mean, the one thing we look at is leading by example. You know, you want to be able to follow your leader right out of the back of the airplane to jump into some unknown territory. You're going to jump in the middle of the ocean and then swim across the beach with your little boats and take out a bad guy, bring him back across the beach, go back in a mini sub, and no one ever knows you're there. And you want a guy that has walked the walk. So you really want to be led by a competent leader who inspires you. So leading by example has been the key, looking for someone you want to emulate. I've also found it's, you know, from a young guy all the way up till recently in the executive position, is how important it is to be a good communicator. So really define your expectations. You know, what is your vision of your organization? You know, where you're taking your team? What is your mission? Is it capture? Is it kill? Or, you know, in acquisition world, we had deadlines on cost, schedule, performance, and there's certain trade-offs as you get there. But that leading by example was key. But as a communicator, really being receptive for feedback, because you're always growing as a leader, good and bad leaders. But really, knowing what the deadlines are, is it truly a deadline? And really, some of these key decisions as a leader, if you're forced to make, if you rush these decisions, you may regret them. When I was making these key decisions on these 18 to 20 year old kids whose lifelong dream was being Navy SEAL, as a director of training, I had the thumbs up and down on whether to keep in the pipeline. And you couldn't come back. It was a one shot deal, especially for the officers.
So you had veto power. You just said,
it ultimately came down to, I was the final decision. Some of these are some well-connected guys that get these phone calls saying, hey, keep them in. And so we looked at high performance, but really high trust was even more important. You can train a guy to be a better performer. But if the trust was an issue, then...
Expound on that. What does high trust mean to you in that environment? So how would you judge that?
So there's actions, whether they're on duty or off duty, away from work, you know, where you can trust the guy. If the guy messes up, he's got to, you know, own that mistake, learn from it, share it. We have these kind of very unfiltered hot washes, debriefs after a mission or a training mission. So if a guy does something by accident or shoots it's a paper silhouette target, shoots the wrong. I mean, there's ways we learn from each other. So really owning that mistake, that's key. But when it comes down to from making that decision for these young guys, you know, the high trust, if the guy had, if it was a lapse in judgment, that's one thing, you screwed up once. But if it was like premeditated, I think that was a little different than how we differentiate the two, between a guy that a little screw up and he's going to move on, or if the situation gets squirrely at a bar, you kind of get out of there. So I think there's some decisions we could see where a guy was making a deliberate, you know, kind of faking ID, sneaking down to Tijuana,
right?
Versus doing things where he was defending his buddy. Really wasn't.
But trust fits in different units of time, because I was sharing with these guys RIP and REAR. As a matter of fact, they're always asking me where these acronyms come from. Sure. Listen to these military guys. RIP and REAR comes from the military. Its rank has its privileges. Rank has its responsibilities. FILO, first in, last out. Most of these terminologies, you and I have talked about it, in the civilian world, there's what's called tactical. In the military world, it's tactical. And you got all these guys that want to be tactical. And so when they're tactical, you know, they buy the Ford Raptor Special Ops Division, you know, edition, and they say FILO and RIP and REAR. But when you actually own those words and live those words, what I was going to say to you is, I have trust. I trust when I meet the snake's going to bite me. I trust that it's going to bite me. So you can establish trust. You just got to know when that trust is used in the right way, or when like, you can trust that a snake is a snake, and you can trust that someone is loyal to a certain degree. And in business, just so you know, at least for me and my business, I learned to trust everybody for who they are today and who they're going to be tomorrow. If that trust is, I can only take it this far and that's worth it, then great. If that trust is, no matter what, they're always going to drop the ball, I don't put them on the field. I don't know how you guys look at trust, but trust has a defined.
It really resonated with me because for our company, we did a planning session and spent a lot of time saying, hey, Kay, what is our mission and vision and what are our values? And trust and loyalty
everything.
To ourselves and to our customers was like one of the top things that came out of our training session. So I agree with you. And I think that that's just one way when you talk about what you've learned, how it will connect. I guess my point is I'm sitting here as you talk, all of this connects. It is the real, there's nothing more real world than what you've done. It's just, it's just finding the right fit, but fascinating.
Like when you're shooting live bullets right next to your buddies and you're covering each other, you could clear a room. You have to know each other. I'm very proficient. You have to know everyone has their own sectors. So there's some, once you train and you've got it down packed and you go on a real world mission, you know your guys are going to cover your back, of course, but everyone has their own set specific roles within that train of guys taking down the objective. So that's where you can trust that guys are going to cover each other. You're not going to shoot at each other. We have lasers, night vision goggles, and you can really, I mean, that's where that training, you build up that. We do anywhere from a 4 to 12 month workup, 18 month workup cycle, and then you deploy. So you've built that trust, that cohesiveness as a team. You deploy downrange, you go overseas for a certain amount of time, do your mission, or you train with your partners until the mission comes up. So there's some tactical application to that.
And then it becomes tactical. And what I think too is the other thing is I've got what I call the plumber's curse. I can tell everybody else how to fix their house, but I won't follow my own advice half the time. And so here as, and I'll share this, like I've done now 400 professional speeches. On stage, I'm great. Put me in the crowd, I fall apart. I want out. I just get too hypervigilant. I just get like, hey, I call it the Sicilian chair. I always want to be in the back in the corner so nobody's behind me because I don't trust my own self.
You're a shy guy. I can see how you do.
But what Anthony and I were talking about, I am shy. Come on. I do get shy as long as you give me the mic, I'm good. Put me in a crowd. I'm like, oh, I don't like that. I don't follow my own advice at times. I can say to everyone else, hey, do this, do this, do this. And I can critique and I can build up. When it looks at me, I have a hard time with it. And you and I went through that and then we just met a couple weeks ago. Like I'm sitting here going, man, this guy is this guy's that. And then as we're walking through and unpacking the situation, I realized not just with Anthony, but with other people, they're like, everything you already know, you just have to internalize it to yourself. But it's when you put yourself in a different environment that you don't trust those skill sets, at least for me. Because I go, oh, now I'm in a different environment. And I realize, even hearing him talking, it doesn't matter what environment I'm in, these principles apply no matter what. Right. Trust, loyalty, decision-making, lead from the front. They're cliché for a reason. What do you do right now, though? Because you're transitioning. You're transitioning. You're like, going, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? Yet you've got all the leadership skills in the world.
So part of it is what I'm doing now is I'm just meeting people in Boise. Yeah. I've got a great network that I'm building. Marv Hager, the head of the local VA, he's been a great resource.
He's phenomenal.
And he'll introduce me to someone, he'll introduce me to another person. So I've been kind of making the rounds, trying to find a good fit and also learning from veterans who have retired. I'm meeting with a guy tomorrow who's 6 months ahead of me. He's retired after 20 years as an Army Lieutenant Colonel, a West Point grad, but sharing his experience because he was 6 months ahead of me. But also there's some great volunteer organizations that I want to be a part of and also tap into for guys that take care of wounded veterans, guys that take care of guys that are getting back on their feet. And I've been invited to be on a part of a board or two to help in those causes. So I think part of it is having that sense of purpose, whether I do it in my day job.
That's what it
or
is.
Do I have it with a voluntary basis. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing where some veterans have it in their new job. Some people are, I think, still trying to find that second sense of purpose, that sense of community. I think every organization is different. And for me, fortunately, after being in the military long enough, I have a decent retirement pay in the Navy. If I don't have that feeling at work, then I'll find another job.
Yeah.
But I can't replicate what I've been doing. And I do realize that. I've been known. I mean, people have told me there'll be an adjustment period.
Right.
But even one of the transition seminars highlighted, you'll go through this kind of identity crisis.
Yeah.
They even talked to professional athletes that had some of these discussions. I've met professional athletes who mm-hmm. made that transition, some better than others. Mm-hmm. But I know even in our guys, some guys are working out of their kitchen, you know, working a laptop, doing virtual stuff. Some guys are back in the mix. Some guys are still kind of military umbrella. And so it's been neat to kind of compare notes. And like when you're parachuting, some guys are landing, have landed. You know, I'm in the landing mm-hmm. phase. Guys are watching me. They're about to jump out of the aircraft for that analogy. So it's been a good kind of network of veterans, particularly in special operations, on resources to help you. I've done mock interviews. And this guy, with retired Navy guy, is like, hey, you can't say that. Like, you gotta tell a relatable story about a time where I actually took a bunch of different guys from different countries and we worked together and built a base, a U.S. base in Eastern Europe, a foreign staging base. But it wasn't until I flew down to the embassy and broke bread with my fellow Navy buddy. I saw he had a Baltimore Orioles cap in the background. I was from Maryland. So I was able to kind of make that personal relationship.
Yes.
And then started to open some doors and we started to bring more people in and then met with very higher ups from the host nation country. Mm-hmm. So some of this, again, just personality based.
Yeah.
Whether you're wearing a uniform or a suit. But I guess really that sense of purpose, you know, you always, even your guys, or your gals, or your team, they know what they're trying to do. Can you translate, you know, what they're doing? Mm-hmm. What is the higher purpose they're doing? Not just make it a widget. You know, it's for a higher cause.
And that's good for our listeners and our viewers to hear. So when you see the words inspire excellence is to create an acorn of an idea that you can plant and grow and go forward with it. And I think I keep hearing purpose. We were talking at lunch. My purpose was limited at the time. My motivation was scarcity. I wanted to get out. And I was sharing with Tommy about goals on getting out. My goal to get out was to get out of adversity. My goal to get out was to get out of dysfunction in my life. But that achievement level was so little. Because once I got out, I thought, oh, I'm out. I'm done. His was driven on more of a positive. And his was to go. I want to go there. Well, mine was to get out. And so I got out. And so my bar was hit and it was hit too soon. And I let off the gas. His goal was, I want to go there. And there's a difference, again, for the viewers and the listeners, and even for yourself when you're thinking about that. If the goal is driven off of scarcity, or if the goal is driven off of some type of fear, it's not that you're not going to achieve it. It's going to be too easy to achieve. If the goal has a positive dominant, which is, I want to go there. I want to build this. He never let off the gas. I'm having to learn. I stepped on the gas, got out from where I was at, and I went, oh, I'm out now. But I want to keep it. And I went to step on the gas. Well, that delay caused other people to be able to just get ahead. And now I'm constantly playing catch up.
Yeah, but it was a great conversation today. And I think it was sparked a little bit by our interview earlier today. But the concept of fear of failure is also when you set that bar and if the only thing you're trying to do is get out,
that's right.
And you fear of failure, it can be motivating. It can be very motivating. Mm-hmm. But what it lacks is the vision and positivity of I'm going somewhere.
Yes.
So then it's not a fear of failure that's motivating. It is an understanding that I am going to have setbacks along the way and mm-hmm. I will adjust and I will grow and I will evolve mm-hmm. towards a purpose. That's a very different approach to life or business or anything else you're doing is, hey, here's where I'm heading and there's going to be setbacks versus a fear of failure on a ceiling that we artificially set for ourselves.
Yeah. So I would just now articulate that into the fear of failure is the nitrous, but it's not the gas.
That's right.
It's just the jump to get you ahead.
And there's nothing, I'll tell you, there's nothing wrong at different times in your life.
To have that.
Of having that and letting that be a temporary motivator. It can be very productive. Some of the most productive times of my life have been when I've been in times of, hey, I'm sinking or swimming.
Right.
I've got a fear of failure and then the productivity goes up. But it's got to be part of some bigger picture, part of some bigger vision. And then it can be the gas. I like that.
Yeah,
it can be the nitro.
It's a nitro. It can't be the fuel. It can be the nitro. There, you got your.
Yeah,
see? There's your first.
There's thing. My first Troyism.
That's your first Tommyism.
But in the acquisition community, which I did a couple years of program management, they talk about fail faster as you learn, you iterate, you do rapid
prototyping. That's right.
The sooner you realize a product doesn't work, it doesn't meet the customer's needs, then you got to change it. So we you could rapidly produce things, 3D printer, mm-hmm. and then you'd fabricate with more advanced materials, and the guys would try it downrange. I think actually print it overseas, mm-hmm. try to make it work and continue to refine it. So the sooner it was tested, whether in the U.S. or overseas, but to fail faster, we encourage guys to push the boundaries, fail, improve, iterate on it to get to the better product and never be satisfied.
Yeah. I think that it's also a misconception because people think they hear these anecdotal things like fail fast and fail forward. And our team will say the end in mind. So like, what's the end in mind? But the end in mind is very two-dimensional on paper. It's not lived through. Mm-hmm. And what does Tyson say? Everybody has a plan until they get punched.
Yeah.
And so when you guys are in the military or in business, I don't know how many corrective courses, like I've just went, that sucked. That was $100,000. Like that just sucked.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to do.
Here's another example. Recently with a lot going on and a lot of objectives and trying to balance everything from a CEO level, every once in a while you'll have someone come in and say, well, wait a minute, what are you doing? You're not, you know, they question you, right? Oh. And I looked over at Ed, who's one of our leaders here. And I said, hey, it's hard to express. We're playing three-dimensional chess every day.
That's right.
And they're looking at it from one or two pieces or moves on that chessboard. But you're going to have strategic failures or learning opportunities or growth along the way. But what's important is to stay back and keep that vision on the three-dimensional chess and say, no, we are heading in the right direction.
And without getting frustrated with the
question. Without getting frustrated with the question, right?
Because I used to say this in my younger days. Asking me a question like that is like a checkers player asking Bobby Fischer what he's doing. Like, come on. Like, you don't have the full picture. And that came off offensive. That came off.
Really?
Because I'd get frustrated because I'm like, you guys, like, I know what I'm doing. But then I realized, too, I also got to let them see that it's trust. It's back to what you're saying, Anthony. The team trusted the paycheck. Did they trust the leader?
Yeah.
And once I got them to trust the leader, the paycheck was the byproduct.
Yeah.
My turnover went a lot lower. My growth and success went a lot faster. And so it goes back to what you're saying, Anthony, is trust is a big thing.
And communication. I mean, communication. He said both things. He said trust first, then communication second.
Yeah.
How do you better communicate the bigger vision, the broader vision to earn the trust so that when you get through those, I agree, it's patient, it's listening. And sometimes you get those questions. I step back and go, okay, I'm not doing a good enough job at communicating the bigger picture here, or the question would be would not be asked, right?
We all think we communicate great until you talk to our wives. But how do you, you guys have to deal with that too in your situation. When you go from the battlefield to the business field, you think it's a transition. I think him and I are going to tell you it's the same. It's just a different landscape, but it really is the same. How do you guys deal with that? And also, let me ask you this. Do you really share everything? There are times, like, do you tell people, hey, I only got a buck in the bank? And I don't know when the next paycheck's coming, but like, do you go to your team and go, I only got a buck in the bank? Do you go to your team and say, we've only got two bullets left and we're going to get our ass kicked? like, how do you discern that?
So you got to be careful what to tell the guys. They're smart, particularly in our community. In the Navy, the submarine guys and SEALs have the highest aptitude requirement test scores to get in. Really? So when I was in charge of BUDS, the training command, at least one in three of the enlisted guys who don't have to go to college had degrees. So some very, very smart guys on your team. Guys with master's degrees have worked on Wall Street, former attorneys. Wow. So a pretty good different cross-section of ways and walks of life. So you can't fool some of these guys. But I think there are times where you have the big picture in mind. And you have to continue to communicate that. I think there was a time early on after 9/11, we went into Afghanistan. We thought all guys between 18 and 60, all fighting age males, were bad guys. And you realize not everyone's a bad guy. And you've heard the phrase, you can win the battle but lose the war. So you can take it one bad guy, he's a mid-level guy. But then you end up blowing in the door, car alarms go off, shattering windshields, and the whole village now is against you because of this one guy. So we had to kind of use our judgment. There's times where there was, you know, street lights and the guys would shoot them out so you'd have a better chance of stealth going in, but you realize that little bit of advantage wasn't a big a deal. Now you pissed off all these guys because you just took out some of their utilities.
Very.
So just those types of analysis.
Awesome. Yeah. Like, you, what battle do you want to pick? Because that just hit me like a ton of bricks. Okay. Do I really want to reprimand, or do I really want to take that on to disrupt the whole apple cart, or let that one slide to get what? That's a great analogy.
I'm going to use that in my parenting.
Okay?
Two teenage daughters.
It won't work.
I really want to blow out all the windows. Take out all the utilities.
Shut it down.
Yeah. That's great.
But I think really, I mean, for the guys to know what is the mission they're going on.
Yeah.
And guys could could have some other sites, but hey, they're more valuable live, for example. Of course, that's been, you know, you've seen that in Hollywood and stuff. But I think that's, you know, for the most part, you're pretty transparent with the guys.
Yeah.
They've got to know the end state, and they've been trained so well. You can trust them. And they know it's not just about the guys, but getting the information off the battlefield and bringing it back to exploit it, share with the intel community, and then and it'll lead to bigger and better things. That's one of the things. This may not have been a big, you know, splash in the news mission, but what you've done, you've uncovered some great things. And I think part of that, keeping the guys focused when it's not all kinetic, it's some guys thrive on that direct action. Not every mission is going to do that. Sometimes you're in a coat tie in a strange country. You're blending in, you're gathering intelligence.
The SEALs do that?
We do. You need some special training to do that.
Right.
But there are times where you're better off.
I didn't know that.
Not coming in the front door.
Yeah.
Or other, maybe we have partners who are equally capable, who have access to certain information, or they're already partnered with a certain country. So I think that there's ways to kind of knowing your team, knowing their strengths and weaknesses.
Right. Guys
with language skills, they can blend in. Sometimes it's not good to have two big guys with G-Shock watches going on. Sometimes it's, you know, the Intel guy, or sometimes we bring females with us because you look like you're a couple and they can do things that we can't do.
So the SF is a category. I just always thought SEALs were door kickers and, you know, obviously doing good, but I didn't realize that you can go in on a non-military or on a non-dress down, like you didn't have your battle rattle and stuff.
So within your team, the special forces and the Rangers, you know, and the SEALs were all part of the special operations community.
Okay.
We have special aviators, special boat drivers. So we're one big team.
I didn't know that.
But within the team of the unit itself, you have specialties. So most SEAL units, you know, have a certain area, also part of the world they're responsible for. So whether they're focused on jungle training, on desert training, on winter warfare training. But within that team, people can specialize in different areas. But the core of the team is the direct action. And then there are some guys who have special language skills or are trained to work with the embassy in a governed space. It's very different than a non-governed space.
But that's the same in business. You got your lawyers, you got your architects.
I want to pivot to a couple of national questions here. But before we leave this, what after your long, amazing career, what's the one thing you wish civilians knew about your job or the military or your world? What's all our listeners out there, what's the one thing you'd say you'd wish that they knew more or perceived different than maybe we perceive?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's so important to know, you know, why we do what we do and kind of the history of why we started the military. But I think there are some people who are living their own world who have no idea. I remember I was in Djibouti in the Horn of Africa, and I just watched this MTV rap video, and I was like, man, these guys have no idea what we're doing. I'm missing another Christmas with my family.
Yeah.
I love that.
So I think just really for the, I think it's definitely continues to get better and better and people appreciate what we're doing. But I think for the military, you know, never forget, for the civilians out there, you know, what they are doing for you. And then when they come back, and there's, I understand the governor has a workforce development board and looking for a veteran to be on their team. I put my name in the hat among others. But I think part of it is.
Tommy can introduce you to Little.
But part of it is, I think.
I broker everything, by the way. Sorry.
All good. You're all connected. But. So I think really never forgetting, you know, the purpose of what we're doing. You know, what's interesting is only, I was looking up some statistics. I spoke at my kid's third grade class. It was Heroes Week, actually, 2 weeks ago.
Awesome.
And only less than 1%, 0.5% of the U.S. civilians serve in the military.
Yeah.
So we have a small population.
Yeah.
But only 3 out of 10 are even eligible. So we're picking from a small cross-section, whether there's reasons, whether it's obesity or criminal record or other reasons.
Eligible for what? Eligible for like employment?
Just to join
service.
The military.
Oh, just to join the military.
So we're picking, and there was actually an article I read about the future of national security or of our security forces because we're just pulling from a dwindling population that's eligible to serve. What's interesting, when I spoke at this class, there were a class of, I think, 24 kids. There were 9 grandfathers who had served. I said, how many kids relatives served? But only 2 parents. And I know, you know, service was compulsory back in the day.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see if, you know, for guys, there's so many skills you get in the military, especially skills that you can translate back to the real world. And I think the military continues to try to recruit. You know, you can see the world is still going to get back and get your GI Bill and get a degree or get your degree first and come in. kind of a long answer to a short question.
Well, but I want to go back to what you said, which is the reason behind this is you wanted to serve your country, mm-hmm. and you were willing to make personal sacrifices, family sacrifices for our country. That's powerful. That's really powerful. How do you think transitioning? How do you think things are going internationally now? I have no idea what you're going to say here, but I mean, I do think you look at the polarized country we have here. There's two sides of that, right? But how are things going internationally and the respect of our country right now around the world?
Let me add to that question too, because I know, give you background, you were over in Europe, you were over in the Middle East. So we got Syria and Turkey. You guys did a lot of work there. How does that look to unravel, or is it unraveled?
So I was actually in Northern Norway with a bunch of senior NATO leaders when the election results were announced.
Wow.
And there were some mixed reactions, obviously, there. You know, fortunately, our leader, the head of NATO, General Scaparotti, who was in charge of U.S. European Command, you know, he would reinforce his leaders all the way down to our young guys that the military-military relationships will endure. We've got your back. And so, you know, people over time realized that there's some political rhetoric and tweets and other things mm-hmm. that were done for a reason. But military, we never talked politics. It wasn't our place. And I think the military alliances, I mean, the partners out there knew that we were always
right.
Work together through transitions of U.S. presidents and different leaders in the civilian world. So I think for us, you know, I saw things on Eastern Europe and Ukraine, some things we were doing for that country. And then the political dynamic, the military dynamic, it was always there. There was the NATO relationship with Turkey, which was very important. And then the Middle East perspective on some of the challenges we were having with the fighting factions there. So, there was always some of those tensions. Obviously, the political decisions were driving our military actions, so we had to respond to those. But at a military level, the guys have been working with us, you know, particularly since 9/11, and so those bonds and trust and
years. Yeah, and you guys, you raised your hand, you swore an oath, and that means an oath to whoever is commander in chief, is the way I understand it. Whether it's left or right, it's whoever is commander in chief is where you're at, and it's God and country. But there's still a humanized perspective, not a political perspective, but there's still a humanized perspective. I know how I feel if, and again, I honestly don't know, but I know how I feel. Like, I'll go in and, you know, clean something up, a department, a division, or whatever, and then if it gets messed up again, I'm like, gosh darn it, I just spent all my time cleaning that up. Do you ever get that reflective look? Do you ever go, and Tommy, do you ever get that reflective look? Grimey, we were just talking like, hey, I had an employee that lack of better terms, just wet the bed. Like it just happened. I'm allowed to say that.
You say it the way you say it.
Yeah. So yeah. I sometimes go, man, I just did all this.
Yeah. All your perspective of what you fought for years, right? And that changes over time, right? How do you process that? And what are your thoughts on it?
So it's tough. I mean, some of the gains we had made in certain areas, and then we pull back and see what happens. I mean, some people could have predicted that. Some people said, you know, hold your ground. We can only extend our force so much. I know that at the special operations community, we have over 60,000 across the globe. But there's been just, we're fraying at the edges. And there's talk of these constant deployments. And so we can't plug all the holes around the world. So we had to, you know, be cautious of it, preserve our force. And we didn't have to do special operations. Send a conventional unit. And so I think over time we were looking at kind of downsizing our footprint so we could focus on the areas that really required special ops level guys and gals forward.
I like that perspective. I've used so downsizing your footprint so that you can do more of an effective job versus spreading yourself so thin that you're only 30% complete all the time.
What is the perception of President Trump as far as the support of him? And I know funding's up. I know a lot of the things that he's changed since getting back in, coming in after Obama. But what within the military would you say the overall, is there a general, or is it just varied based on individual?
It's pretty varied. I think the resources, as you described, are key for our readiness. And those have been, you know, pretty substantial. So I think the military definitely recognizes that. There's certainly opinions out there that I've heard. We don't necessarily share them
sure.
in public, you know, whether the funding for one of Trump's projects here versus other things we're doing. And I think there's been quite a bit of that on the news. But I think in general, the guys appreciate the resources. Not everyone is going to agree with a commander-in-chief decision overseas. There's some guys who are more vocal than others, to be honest. So I think there's a mixed. I think in general, most military are conservative, are Republican. But I would say that it's pretty mixed from what I've seen. Not many guys show their cards, particularly when you're in more senior roles.
Sure.
Probably keep it a little more to themselves.
I have no problem with saying I voted for Trump. Trump and I had a personal relationship before he ran for presidency. I worked for him. And I also have no problem with saying I don't agree with 100% of the stuff he does. I think, at least for me, and Tommy, I would ask your perspective on this too, at least for me, fiscally, the administration has done good for us, fiscally. Sure. Personally, is there some things that I wish that maybe my kid sis wouldn't hear, or you know, my young nieces and stuff like that? I go, listen, I probably wouldn't want that I call it bedside manner. But fiscally, at the end of the day, it for us in this early run seems to be doing good. And so, like, again, I come out loud and proud.
Yeah. And the other thing that so the policies, right, as a capitalist through and through to my very bones, right? I love the policy that's happened. And I love the policy of the support for the military, at least what's said. I just wondered if, and you know, the dollars, I mean, you look at some of the pullbacks that were made in the prior administration and the funding.
And so I
think that's good. But I've always wondered on the inside, because, you know, there's a lot of decisions that are made at that level that have got to, you know, I imagine just in the private sector, not everyone agrees with all the decisions, let alone in military, where you have sometimes decade long missions.
Yeah. Well,
someone coming in and making changes to decade long missions. And I don't know how much it's a world I don't understand, but.
Well, there's got to be, just like in business, there's got to be politics, bureaucracy. Yep. There's got to be lobbying.
Yep.
There's got to be swaying left and right. So like in the field, you probably, I'm going to ask, like, did you experience that a lot in the field, or did you experience that more when you became the joint command kind of thing? And then,
so I'd say for me, the first time in Afghanistan, we were making some progress. They were pulling helicopters to Iraq, which we didn't really have the big picture. That was one of the first times. I was in my mid-30s, or early 30s. And that was pretty, that was hard to digest.
That's an interesting perspective.
We didn't
understand. Not everyone can say that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I was pulling up these precious resources to go to Iraq. We didn't really have the context there. So I think, but as I got more senior, I was exposed to some pretty high-level discussions, sitting on these video teleconference with Washington, D.C. I was in second charge, two-star general, pretty high-ranking guy. And so I was exposed to a lot of these high-level discussions. We do these global exercises, talking about how things in Europe, the actions of country X, would affect things in the Pacific theater or in Africa, for example. So I think it was also an eye-opener to me on how certain countries have their tentacles all over the world. I didn't think our guys...
It's back to what you said. It's three-dimensional chess, right?
Yeah.
So when you're on the ground and you see the helicopters leave, you're like, what the heck? We have employees that see decisions saying, hey, I'm shifting this person over here, pulling the resource for you. They see it from their perspective, their world, but they don't see it from the top down. We only got about 2 minutes left, and I do want to sneak in some questions there. First question is, what's the difference between the SEAL teams, SEAL Team 1? We always hear about the famous SEAL Team 6. What's the difference?
So the even number teams are on the East Coast. The odd number teams are on the West Coast.
Oh, there you go. McLovin. That was McLovin's question. McLovin. So say it again. The even number teams are
just like the Navy fleet. So
Okay. Even
number East Coast, odd number West Coast.
I literally didn't know that. That's awesome. Then I'm going to give you this statement. McLovin and the other guys were always asking me, like, where do you come up with these terms and these sayings? I'm like, well, a lot of times I'm very tactical. I'm listening to the military podcasts, or I'm listening to a lot of these TED Talks. But I'm going to give you a statement. I want you to unpack it for us. Objectives stay the same. Plans change. Unpack that for me and what that means to you.
So really, I mean, Mike Tyson made that little analogy you talked about. But you know, the objective you have as any organization, this is how you're going to get there. You plan, you have contingency planning, you have contingency. So you have different, so you prepare should you have roadblocks or certain scenarios happen. So we plan for a number of contingencies so you can still achieve your objective.
So that's what I want you to hit on.
Yeah. So if you land on the objective and something happens or a squirter leaves, the objective goes the next one over. So we train and rehearse and we're prepared for that. But one thing that that we were taught, you know, in the last wrap up here, I had a retired 40-year Navy SEAL Admiral talk about one thing he left when he left. He said, "Never quit." That's one thing that, you know, we resonates.
You said that today.
Yeah, I mean, if you persist, and you know that no matter what it takes, you're going to get the job done. You're going to pull your buddy out. That's one thing that the guys know. We're going to achieve the objective. We're going to do it legally. We're going to get the job done. It's going to hurt sometimes, but we're going to get there. We're going to bring our guys back safely. Never quit. And that applies to the real world. You know, the commitment to excellence about doing the right thing, but achieving the higher objective is being inspired and led by the right leaders. So that's one thing that that he told me that resonated, that I'm sure it's one of our sayings. Never
quit. Somebody wants to get your resume. Somebody wants to socialize with your experience. How do they get a hold of you?
LinkedIn's an easy way. It's Anthony Baker.
Okay.
That's probably the easiest way.
Awesome. So Anthony Baker moved to Boise, Idaho, former Navy SEAL, looking to socialize his leadership skills. And thank you very much, Tommy. I'm going to leave it with you.
Just a huge thank you. Thank you for your service, your commitment. I think some of the things you said today just really hit home, and really appreciate you being on. I'm sure our listeners are going to appreciate it too. So thank you, Anthony.
Great. Thanks, Tommy, for having me
today. Absolutely. We're going to wrap cameras, but we'll talk. We'll keep talking. I just want to wrap. Everybody, that's Inspire Excellence Idaho. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.